Welcome back to the program. We spent a lot of time here talking about cities, talking about urban landscapes. We're going to spend some time right now talking about a city that truly defines what a city should be. As we turn our eyes on Paris, the City of Light, we're going to talk about a wonderful collection of essays that give new meaning and new power to the city of Paris. It's edited by our guest, Penelope Rollins. She lived in Paris for many years. She's a journalist, a critic. She's contributed to the Wall Street Journal, Architectural Digest, and the New York Times Magazine. It is my pleasure to have her here to talk about her newest work, Paris Was Ours. Penelope Rollins, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What is it about Paris that, unlike other cities, people either love it or hate it? It has a power that is unique unto itself.
It just has this magnetism, and it's drawn people since the dawn of time, almost. Of course, I think at the heart of it is its beauty and its veneer of civilization and the great food. But people who have lived there, I think, see a very different side to the city, which is what my collection is about, in a sense.
And talk about that, the difference among people that live there as opposed to, as you would say, the surface Paris, the Paris that sort of we conjure up in our imagination, which is not always the place where people live.
Yeah, I mean, that's what really got me thinking about doing a collection like this, was I began to think, why are people so obsessed with Paris? Why does it draw people in? And why is it as beautiful as it is? And I realized it's the two things are sort of the same. It's a really tough place to live. Parisians are very disciplined. They're very unforgiving. As somebody who's lived there and worked there, which many of the people in my collection have done, you sort of can't believe how hard it is. Everyday life, people are pushing back. And I realized that they demand a lot from everything, which is kind of why it looks that good. You know, there's this real discipline at the heart of life there.
And has that, as best you can tell, has that always been the case with regard to Paris, at least within the 19th and 20th century?
I think so, yeah. I think that it goes way, way back. And you know, let's not even look at the French Revolution. I mean, that was an extremely tough environment to be in, of course. And it all sort of works together, I think.
And were there some common themes along the lines that you're talking about among these 32 essays in the collection?
There are. I mean, a couple of people have teased me, must everyone be so melancholy? But there is that. There's a kind of weariness to it all, but there's also this huge appreciation and sort of people are exhilarated by Paris, by just the life there and the food, of course, and the culture that just seems to drip from every surface. And I think the inspiration is another really common theme, people saying, you know, this is incredible.
How much of that is as a result of reputation and history as opposed to the actual experience of being in Paris?
Oh, I think it's a lot of its reputation. I mean, it's so romanticized, as we know. And the last radio interview I was on played Edith Piaf. So, you know, it does sort of lend itself to these cliches. So I think that's what draws people in and what is thrilling about it. And the other thing, for we Americans, we don't have that kind of history going way, way back, and that's pretty exciting.
Come back to the melancholia you were talking about before, this sense of ennui that sort of permeates Paris. Where does that come from, do you think?
You know, in part, I think it is this toughness that almost everyone in the book alludes to. It is the sort of harshness of the environment. It's also, let's face it, the weather. You know, the winters there are really, the days are very short. And I think people who haven't lived there full time don't realize that the sun really doesn't shine for 4 months. And it's incredibly hard to be around. I mean, even in New York, where it can get so cold, you get light, a lot of light. So I think that's it.
There's also this contradiction that emerges from some of these essays. On the one hand, as you say, people being very tough and kind of unforgiving in many respects. but yet on another level being very open to kind of human frailty.
Yes, I think that's true. And there is this kind of spontaneous, when people are kind, it seems so genuine and warm because it is a bit unexpected. And, you know, the other thing is the friends are tough, but then when they're on your side, they're not going anywhere. They're much less ready to extend their friendship. But once they are friends, you can count on them, really. And I found that a real contrast with Americans. I mean, we're friendly to everyone, and that's a lovely thing, but it's perhaps a bit more sincere the way it's done there.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that and the nature of friendships there.
I think that, you know, I've had, when I first lived there, I've lived there twice, which gave me a really sort of interesting perspective, and I kind of bracket the book between these two visits. And the first time I lived there, it was in my very early 20s, and it was all so new. And I remember someone saying to me, the French only have 5 friends. They don't want any more friends than that. And I found that very startling. But and this friend was quoting a French friend who said, I have all the friends I need, end of subject. And to us, that's just so different. But again, it's this very discriminating sense, perhaps too much in other ways.
I guess they're not going to be going on Facebook to the same degree.
That's funny, because I think they're all on Facebook. So, and, you know, here's the other thing. Paris is so different now. I mean, even being back there, I was there for about 2 months last summer working, and I suddenly thought, you know, I think I'm in California, because people kept turning around telling me to have a nice day, or the French equivalent, and you would never have heard that when I first went to live there. So it has really lightened up.
Do you think that that's generational, or is it something's changed fundamentally about the culture? What do you think?
I think it's, I remember the second time I lived there full time, a French friend saying, you know, in a service economy, you can't go around insulting everyone. And there was actually, he was talking about his compatriots, the French. There actually was one of the French ministers of education or something actually got on, I guess he was the culture minister, sorry, got on the television at some point and said, please be nicer. There have been public relations campaigns for Parisians in particular. So I think it's partly that. Paris is the number one tourist destination in the world. There's a lot of money involved. And really, they had to sort of come along, I think. It's sort of a result of the globalization, I guess, of the world.
And really raises the question, within the context of all that we have talked about, is why it is that Paris is the number one destination. And goes to what some of these people have written about in this collection of 32 essays, that once you've been to Paris, unlike going to even any other famous city, there's something about it that stays with you, that becomes part of your consciousness in so many ways.
Yeah, I think that's completely true. And that was really what I was after, was to describe the transformative effect of living in Paris and how it changes you forever. And it truly does. I see that in it's almost like a cult. It sounds a bit funny, but in my other friends who have lived there too, we share something truly profound, I think.
How did it change you?
I think it made me more disciplined. This is going to sound silly, but it makes you much more conscious of your appearance, which isn't a bad thing, you know. People there look good. They pay a lot of attention to that. And I think that sense of aesthetics and daily life, I mean, I don't want to say I'm Martha Stewart, but you get much more careful about how you eat, how you cook, how you set a table, so a lot of it is surface, but again, also the discipline. The other thing that really struck me is the toughness in a way is good. You're made to feel that you're not special, and it makes you work harder at being who you are. Sounds sort of mystical, I guess.
There's also the degree to which the discipline has a role. It's not discipline for just the sake of discipline, but its role in enabling us to interact with each other in a different kind of way.
I do. I think that's completely true. And, you know, there's this another thing people mention in the book is the sort of script you walk through in daily life in Paris. You never stop someone on the street and ask directions without saying, "Good morning, sir. Am I deranging you?" is the literal translation. It's funny. Am I annoying you? Excuse me. And sort of apologizing. And then you ask the question. And once you get into the script, it gets very almost addictive. It's a kind of politeness that's really positive in the end. And I always come back to America sort of shocked at how you're accosted on the street and people approach you almost aggressively.
Does Paris have more power as more and more of the world becomes like America in that regard? In terms of lack of discipline and not the same level of mannered behavior?
I don't know. You know, that's a really interesting question. But I don't know if it becomes more powerful, but it never becomes unpopular. That's what I find fascinating, that, you know, the cliche of Hemingway, that if you've lived there, it stays with you. It just has an appeal. If you say you've lived in Paris, people react in a certain way. I mean, I know my son, who's 22, he tells young women he's lived in Paris when he was a child, and they get very enthusiastic.
I mean, I guess the real concern, if you're a Parisian, I guess the concern is that the city is not there as a kind of Disneyland of manners, that it doesn't exist as an anachronism, as an example of a place that somehow is out of place and out of time, but that it has an authenticity all of its own.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if that's, if it's almost funny to think of true Parisians, people who will spend their whole lives there, being surrounded by people who come to it in an almost a religious way, almost as a pilgrimage, whereas they're living their daily lives. It's a bit of a discrepancy.
Yeah, talk a little bit about some of these pieces, some of the authors, and some of the 32 essays in this collection.
Sure. I didn't want it to be all Americans. I wanted it to be kind of a diverse slice of life. So I looked far and wide. You know, as usual with a book contract, you don't have unlimited time or funds. So I grabbed what I could in a fairly short period of time. I was really delighted to include Samuel Shimon, who is an Assyrian writer raised in Iraq, writing in Arabic, although his actual language, I think, is Aramaic. And his perspective, because after all, Paris is a very Arabic city, or it has a rather large Arab population. I also I was delighted to find Zoe Valdez, who's a very spirited Cuban writer, very well known around the world, except not in America. So that part was fun. I wanted to get a mix of ages, if I could, a mix of ethnicities. And one of the writers isn't even a writer, and that was really neat. She's a young French blogger who was homeless and wrote a blog about having children with and nowhere to live, and is now, in fact, quite happily in a subsidized apartment in Paris. So I aimed for a real mix.
There is also a sense, even with that story, I mean, with all of these collectively, a sense of getting the kind of glamour that is Paris.
Right, of trying to identify what it is. And I like that. I mean, they all come to it as if they're arriving at a feast. I mean, that's the wonder. I love the descriptions of Zoe Valdez coming from Cuba. Couldn't believe her eyes. She hadn't seen a chicken in 10 years. I mean, this is how impoverished her family was. There was a sort of sense of this voluptuous environment all around.
As more and more people come to Paris from so many other parts of the world, how does it resist becoming more of a melting pot?
I think it is a melting pot, really. I mean, they have such a different view to immigration than we do. They believe that you become French when you move there, whereas we're all Italian-American, Irish-American, African-American. So they do seek to just sort of homogenize people. And that, and there's also a sense, which I love there, of real equality. I mean, the French Revolution, of course, was hideously violent, but they do have the ideal of people being equal. And I really love that. Everyone goes to public schools. So there's a real, you know, sort of melding of different ethnic groups and classes.
It seems that the fundamental difference is that it happens organically, that they don't sit around and talk about how everybody should be equal, or don't talk about how everyone should sort of meld into the landscape and become French or become Parisian. It just organically happens.
Yeah, it's true. And that whole business about the script of daily life, that does sort of equalize you. You know, if you're calling everyone sir when you go through your day, even if it's the guy sweeping the street or the bank manager or everyone, it does have a way of making everyone the same, and it's really ideal, I think.
How did you not long to be in Paris all the time when you were working on this?
Oh, I did. I know. I left there, and the last essay in the book is actually one I wrote, and it sounds dramatic, but leaving Paris was one of the hardest things I've ever done, moving back to California. And it made me work it through in my mind. But after I did that, I decided I'd go back every summer and work, and I brought my poor school-age son, although he didn't suffer, I have to say, with me every summer, and we lived that way. So I've kept up different doses of it.
And the photograph that adorns the cover, which captures both the melancholy and the glamour of Paris, where did that come from?
I think, you know, it's fascinating. I think it came from Flickr. I saw on the back credit. I mean, it is a brave new world. I think that wasn't from a famous photographer, but
it's very compelling.
It's compelling, and it so sums up the book. And it looks just like Paris. You know, rainy, and you see, you know, the kiosk that sells newspapers, and all those little elements of French life. It's so organized, the cityscape of Paris.
Penelope Rowlands. The book is Paris Was Ours. It's out from Algonquin Press. Penelope, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you so much. It was really enjoyable.